Hello, I'm Harold Halpert. This is number 0341, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0341. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, famed award-winning science fiction writer Robert J. Sawyer is back on the show to talk about his new novel, Quantum Night, which deals with psychopaths.
Obviously, psychopaths are glib, manipulative, clever individuals in most cases who would do better than average, not worse than average, at looting the authorities. I suspect there's a great many of them, far more. In fact, in my novel, I postulate that two out of every seven human beings is a psychopath. That's a lot of people. That's about 2 billion worldwide.
Pat Caporelli, a media manager for Chrysler Fiat, talks about women in motorsports.
When I first started in motorsports, there had been a couple, but it was a rarity. It wasn't something that you saw very often. But suddenly, in the last couple of years, I've been involved with different series and realized that women were a lot more involved in motorsports than I might have thought. And as the years progressed, realized that they're coming much more to the forefront and they're being noticed more, not because they're women in racing, but because they actually have a lot of skills and talent.
Zombie artist Rob Sacchetto, who's celebrating 10 years doing zombie art, talks about his latest project, Zombie Pinup Playing Cards.
I've done a few actual card decks for bicycle playing cards in the past, most notably the Everyday Zombie deck, and then the a Bigfoot deck. And then I kind of thought, man, you know, the zombie pinup divas that I post on Zombie Daily often are the sort of biggest fan favorites on Zombie Daily. And I thought, what a great showcase for them than having them in this zombie playing card deck, because, you know, every card will have a new, like a different zombie pinup drawing on it.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day, the guest Slater. The person who told you this was show number 0341 was Harold Halpert, known to most in the world as Herky, a childhood friend who currently lives in Germany, Sweden, and Canada. It's like he's in Interpol's witness protection program. Anyway, thank you very much, Herky, or Harold. I never called him Herky when we were growing up. Thank you very much, Harold, for being a guest Slater on this edition of the Stuff File program. We've known each other since we were about 8 years old, and Harold has always been one of the best guys on the planet. Again, thanks, Harold, for doing the guest slate on this program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Okay, here's a story that doesn't feature the brightest cop in the world, but in his defense, he's in Florida, where apparently brain cells are fried. A Florida police officer is under fire after posting ads on Craigslist looking for women to have sex with, quote, a uniformed officer in his patrol car, unquote. Officer Kevin Thompson of Lady Lake resigned after pictures surfaced showing him pleasuring himself in his patrol car while he was in uniform. Thompson, who is married, responded to the Craigslist ad of a 38-year-old woman about 4 months ago, and the two began meeting while the officer was on duty. Thompson allegedly put out false patrol alerts so that he could hang out with the woman while on duty, and during one of the visits, the woman came to his patrol car and saw the officer pleasuring himself while holding a pair of her underwear. She told police that she took about 15 photos of the officer's actions. That was his big mistake. You never let your girlfriend take photos of you enjoying the pleasure of your own company while with her panties. Heck, even civilians know that. Anyway, The woman told deputies that she did not know that Thompson was married when the affair began. When she learned that he had a wife, the officer promised to leave his wife and live with her. That did not happen. After he tried to break up with her, the woman told officers that she threatened to tell Thompson's wife about the affair and to show her the pictures of him pleasuring himself in his car. Thompson then sent her threatening text messages saying that if she did so, he would see to it that her daughters were taken away from her and she will be arrested for threatening a police officer. Now, Thompson resigned the day after the allegations were made public. So, basically, his career came to an end because he was caught red-handed. And now that the word is out around the department, how do you think the other cops who have to use that same squad car feel about driving around in that vehicle? Ooh. Meanwhile, Royal National lifeboat crews were scrambled after reports of a face-down body in the water off New Quay, Cornwall, England. About 40 rescuers combed the water by boat and by air. It was good information from a reliable source known to us, and he was quite certain that it wasn't a seal or anything like that, said operations manager Gareth Horner. The 999 caller gave accurate information, which led to a successful search and a positive outcome. Well, sort of, anyway. The body they recovered was a fully dressed inflatable sex doll. We would hope that it got into the sea accidentally, Horner added. Last year, New Quay announced a zero-tolerance ban on sex dolls, and that may be behind the event. Everyone knows they have banned inflatable dolls in New Quay, one observer said. So, maybe the authorities spotted a stag party with one, and they tried to quickly hide the evidence by throwing it into the harbor. Rescue crews threw the recovered doll into the trash. Well, it was face down in the harbor, so hopefully there wasn't somebody, you know, underneath it at the time. And seriously, what's the deal with a community that has a zero tolerance on inflatable dolls? There has to be a story behind that somewhere. Yeah. Anyway, a salesman who accidentally killed his lover while using a cucumber as a sex toy has gone on trial for negligent homicide in Germany. 46-year-old Oliver Dietmann could be jailed for up to 5 years for the bedroom death of his lover, Rika Varna, who was also 46. The court in Mannheim heard the sordid details of the episode, which also featured a bunch of carrots and some zucchini. He told the court he and his lover often use vegetables as a substitute for sex toys. I wonder if they've seen the movie 9 1/2 Weeks. Anyway, he told the court he and his lover often use vegetables, as I mentioned, and he told them how, after the cucumber had served its purpose, I put it in her mouth. But suddenly, I saw there was smoke coming from the kitchen. I forgot that I had a piece of meat on the stove for my dog. I ran to the kitchen, fed my dog, and then went out on the balcony to smoke a cigarette. He said when he returned to the bedroom, Rika was unconscious. Medical experts later said that the cucumber got wedged in her throat, cut off her air supply, and plunged her into a coma. Are any of you buying his story? I mean, you smell burning meat, so you run to the kitchen. That part I get. But then you go out on the balcony to have a cigarette and what? You forget you were having sex with your girlfriend? Talk about an inattentive lover. And by the way, buddy, the cliche is to smoke after the sex is done. Yeah. The manager of a Target department store in Green Acres, Florida, called police after reviewing security camera video of an office. According to the police report, the video showed 24-year-old Grace Garcia counting out some cash bills, then taking the cash and hiding it inside the left part of her bra. The manager confronted Garcia and recovered $720 in cash. Garcia allegedly admitted to police she had taken random amounts of cash about 15 times for a total of around $6,000 and used the money for personal issues. She was booked on a charge of grand theft. In other words, busted over her bust. Truly a boob. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, police in Post Falls, Idaho, noticed a car going the wrong way and pulled it over. The driver identified himself as Santa Claus and had a driver's license to prove it. Claus, who is 67 years old, from Washington, admitted to having 3 or 4 beers and was arrested and charged with DUI. Breath testing measured his blood alcohol at 0.130 and 0.119%. Officers noted Claus was cooperative throughout the interview process and the arrest process. He pleaded guilty to misdemeanor reckless driving and was fined $700. And now you know what St. Nick does during his off-season. You know, I thought it was only Rudolph who had a red nose. I'm also wondering what that cop will be getting for a Christmas present this coming year. One has to wonder. Anyway, let's get to our first guest on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? One of the most prolific sci-fi writers is Robert J. Sawyer. He has just released his 23rd novel. It's called Quantum Night. The Hugo and Nebula Award-winning author is about to embark on a book tour, but he's taken a little time to talk about it right now with us and discuss his latest tome. He joins us via Skype from Toronto. Hi, Robert.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thank you very much for doing this.
My pleasure.
So this book, Quantum Night, it does deal with, well, psychopaths.
Yes. The standard research says that maybe 1, maybe 2% of the human race is psychopathic. And there's a problem with that figure. The figure is based on testing people who you have access to, which normally is psychopaths who have been dumb enough to be caught by the police. And my mother was a statistician. She taught me when somebody quotes a figure, ask how they arrived at it. Obviously, psychopaths are glib, manipulative, clever individuals in most cases who would do better than average, not worse than average, at eluding the authorities. I suspect there's a great many of them, far more. In fact, in my novel, I postulate that two out of every seven human beings is a psychopath. That's a lot of people. That's about 2 billion worldwide.
Does it ever make you wonder how many of them are in political power?
This is exactly the thing. See, people tend to think of, when I say psychopath, or you say it, they think of Paul Bernardo, or they think of a fictional character like Hannibal Lecter. These are monsters and serial killers and cannibals, even. And most psychopaths are not, in fact, violent. The technical definition is somebody who is utterly devoid of empathy, incapable of feeling for another human being. Many of the captains of industry are psychopaths. There's no question about that. Many politicians are psychopathic, including, I dare say, as we talk right now, the current front runner for the Republican nomination in the United States, Donald Trump, is almost certainly clinically psychopathic. These are people who are callous, manipulative, glib, often sexually promiscuous. I'm not making up these characteristics. There's a checklist that's used in clinical assessment. It's actually used worldwide. It was devised by a Canadian named Robert D. Hare, H-A-R-E, like a rabbit, professor emeritus at the University of British Columbia. These characteristics don't necessarily channel into violence, but they do channel into being dangerous people in one way or another to have around you.
It's often said that when you talk to someone like yourself who is a sci-fi writer, that science fiction writers basically take what is going on in the current present time and postulate a certain futuristic bent to it. What did you see going on in life today that made you think, I've got to write Quantum Night?
Well, you know, as you said, it's my 23rd novel, and I've been known as an optimistic writer, a guy who had a sunny disposition and a sunny view about tomorrow. And looking at the world, looking at the rise of the right-wing authoritarianism in the United States and racism coming to the fore after we thought we'd kind of tamped it down in the last century, all of this sort of thing has really made me have to reassess whether or not my optimism about the future was reasoned or I had blinders on, whether it was kind of a naivete. And I wanted to really engage with the question of why, despite the fact that so many of us have had our consciousness raised about issues of women's rights, animal rights, rights of the poor, rights of the differentially abled, rights of the gender fluid, all of these things we think we've made great progress on, and then we turn around and government after government is clawing back freedoms in those areas. How does that happen? That's what I wanted to explore. And in science fiction, you come up with a thought experiment that hopefully sheds some light on the real world that we're facing.
Okay, so you're questioning your own think process when
yes.
when you decide to you're writing a book like Quantum Night. Do you know where your thought process is going as you're writing it, or do you kind of learn a little bit about yourself along the journey of writing it?
I learned a lot about myself in this book. The novel actually hinges on something that's got a terrible name, utilitarian ethics. It sounds cold, but that's what Mr. Spock espoused on Star Trek. It's simply the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. Maximize happiness wherever you go in life. That's all that utilitarianism is. And my main character is a utilitarian philosopher. He teaches at the University of Manitoba, my character, my novel. And as I looked into this, I realized that I'd always thought of myself as a good, moral, giving, generous person. But real utilitarians today, the most famous one is a professor from Australia named Peter Singer, say, you know, you can't really be maximizing the happiness in the world if you still eat meat, because there's an awful lot of suffering on the part of animal husbandry, the way we raise pigs and chickens. It's unconscionable. If you've ever seen, you know, the clips that are on YouTube or actually visited one of those plants, you can't be maximizing the happiness in the world if you spend $5,000 on a vacation when people are starving in Africa or other places on the planet. I came to realize that I talked the talk way more than I walked the walk. And I think a lot of people, we kind of comfortably think that caring about or the slacktivism of posting on Facebook or Twitter is enough to change the world. It isn't. You really have to follow up with deeds. And I learned, hopefully, to make myself a better person as I faced my own shortcomings. You know, it's easy to write about psychopaths and say, okay, they're evil people that are out there, but it's the indifference, the inaction of those of us who think that we're good but just kind of didn't get around to doing anything good today that really create the problems in the world.
Now, I know your story takes place in the not-too-distant future, in the year 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And the prime minister is the current Calgary mayor, Naheed Nemshi, and you make him Canada's first Muslim prime minister. Now, first of all, have you spoken to the mayor about this?
I sent him an autographed copy last week, and we had a little interaction on Twitter many months ago. I'd done a reading at a literary festival. Somebody had heard me read a scene in which he was prime minister, and so tipped off Mayor Nenshi. I hope he likes the book. I'm an enormous fan of his. The World Mayor Foundation, as you may know, named him the top mayor in the world. The organization of city mayors said, hey, he's the best we've got. There was only one other North American in all the shortlist. It was a guy who was a mayor of a town in Texas. This guy is phenomenal. When I was writing this book, the thought experiment, though, was it really is realistic that a guy like that could become prime minister of Canada. And what if one of these Islamophobic politicians becomes president of the United States? Would there be a conflict if an American right-wing president saw that our head of state is the queen, but the person in top authority in Canada was a practicing Muslim? Would that longest undefended border in the world start looking to some American eyes as a bad idea? That's what the novel explores in part.
Wow. It's, again, another fascinating look at what our future may hold. And again, 23 novels now. It's like the Energizer Bunny. Do you focus laser point like on writing a novel and then you work through it from beginning to end, or do ideas for other novels come your way while you're still writing the previous one?
It's the latter. Absolutely, Peter. I'm always thinking about future projects, not deliberately. I try to have that laser beam focus you spoke of. But the mind wanders off, or you read something in nonfiction, and I'm a voracious researcher, that suggests might be an interesting project down the road. So I'm now looking actually at all, because I finished Quantum Knight. Obviously, it's coming out next week, or this week as this will air. And I'm looking at all the bits and pieces that I've gathered for future projects and trying to see which ones might fit together in a jigsaw puzzle that'll be both entertaining, because a novelist has to be entertaining, but also provocative, because I think science fiction is the literature of ideas. It is the literature of thought experiments that would be impractical or unethical or impossible to conduct in real life. And I'm looking at all those little bits and pieces and saying to myself, absolutely, which one of those am I going to pursue next? Which several of those am I going to combine into something hopefully new?
Many years now as a science fiction writer, have any of the things you've written about earlier in your career, have they come to pass or have they gone way off base?
No, you know, I wrote an awful lot in 2002, 2003. In fact, I won the Hugo, science fiction's top award, for a book called Hominids, and it had two sequels about constant individual surveillance, life logging, monitoring of everything that's going on. I essentially, to some substantial degree, predicted the fact that we would start changing our behaviors because of constant self-monitoring, that everything was being recorded on our iPhones, although I didn't attribute them to Apple. So yeah, that's an example, but there've been numerous ones. Of course, I've missed the mark as well. The science fiction writer's job is not to predict the future. As Ray Bradbury said, his job was to prevent the future. He didn't want the future of Fahrenheit 451 to come to pass. He wanted to warn you about a future that might be terrible if we let it come to pass. So sometimes we get them right, sometimes we get them wrong. Sometimes we're hoping against hope that we're going to be wrong. And in Quantum Knight, which has a darker tone to it than some of my other books, I'm definitely hoping that some of the vision in there will turn out not to be the case, that we will find the better angels of our nature and continue to make for a brighter tomorrow.
The book is called Quantum Knight. It's just out now. It's written by Robert J. Sawyer, his 23rd novel. Thank you very much, Robert, for being on the program with us once again.
Peter, always a pleasure. Anytime for you.
Robert J. Sawyer, author of Quantum Knight. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0341, and you'll find links to Robert's website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander's show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. If you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
From Montreal, Canada, and spanning the globe like a butterfly on speed, this is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about women in motorsports. Plus, we'll let you know how you can get your very own playing cards with zombie pinups on them. Ooh. Plus, we have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on. And Much more Stuff File news right here, right now, on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. As someone who spent plenty of time in church while growing up, I was always taught that religion was supposed to bring out the best in people, but I've got a couple of stories here right now where some folks are just a little unclear on the concept. Number one, 49-year-old Angel Rivera was arrested in December in Orlando, Florida, on allegations that he punched a child in the face because the boy was not getting dressed for church fast enough. And the boy, by the way, was wearing an ankle brace, which slowed him down. No, 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 no. There's a special place in hell for that guy. But this second similar item is giving the ironically named Angel from the first story a run for his collection plate money. 28-year-old Ryan Daly was arrested in Las Cruces, New Mexico in February on several charges after police said he beat his mother by pounding her with a Bible. His explanation, police said, was that when he asked her who her soul belonged to, she repeatedly declined to answer. You know, some people just don't get it, do they? Okay, I have mentioned in the past that we are all God's creatures, and there's a reason why everything on this planet is on this planet. But I've also lamented in the past that I could never find the use or the need for the common pigeon. You know, those are just two creatures that Noah could have left off the ark. I'm just saying. But science might now make me possibly rethink that. The much maligned pigeon was recently found by researchers to be as skilled as humans at distinguishing between slides of benign versus malignant human breast tissue. Writing in the journal PLOS One, specialists from the University of Iowa and the University of California, Davis, lauded the bird's processing of color, contrast, brightness, and image compressing, marveling that pigeons see more wavelengths of light than humans, even though their brains are 1,000th the size. So, apparently, they are more than just rats with wings. To the pigeon, I apologize. And we have a couple of items together that can only be described as awkward moments in lockup. Number one, 51-year-old Joel Sloan was booked into jail for DUI by a sheriff's deputy in Birmingham, Alabama in February. Sloan was dressed head to toe as a clown, and no explanation was offered, by the way. Oh, come on. I mean, no one thought to ask? Really? You arrest a guy dressed as a clown and you don't ask him why he's dressed as a clown? Come on, inquiring minds need to know. And number two, 23-year-old Vaughn Tucker was booked into jail in Tulsa, Oklahoma in February on drug charges. He was wearing a t-shirt with large lettering on the front that said, "I would cuddle you so hard." Yes, well, depending on his cellmate, he might just get his wish. Yeah. Customs officers in New York said a woman returning from a trip to Jamaica was concealing half a pound of cocaine in her vagina. You know, we have this story way too often, now that I think about it. Anyway, U.S. Customs and Border Protection said officers at John F. Kennedy International Airport questioned Shakira Thompson when she returned to the United States from a trip to Kingston, Jamaica. CBP officers said Thompson admitted to vaginally inserting a foreign body. The egg-shaped object removed from Thompson's vagina turned out to be a bundle of about half a pound of cocaine with an estimated street value of $10,000. Here's a quote from the director of CBP's New York field operations that I find just a tad disturbing. "This seizure is just another example of our CBP officers being ever vigilant in protecting the United States from the distribution of these illicit drugs." Wow. I'm just curious as to what vigilance led to such a cavity search. Anyway, Thompson was turned over to the Port Authority Police Department and is facing narcotics smuggling charges. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, regular listeners of the Stuff File program know that we have a feature called Let's Be Fair with Bob DiRigo Jones each week as he looks at the litigious society that is prevalent in the United States. As a matter of fact, that segment comes up after our next guest, so stick around for that. But by the way, the litigious society that we talk of isn't only a problem in America. For instance, after news reports of a male Siberian tiger being playful with a male goat, ordinarily a tiger's meal, in a Russian safari park, lawyer Alexei Krestyanov pressured the local prosecutor in February to embargo further announcements claiming that such coverage harmed children by provoking interest in non-traditional sexual relations. Really? You see, even though there wasn't any hanky-panky going on, because one animal didn't kill and eat the other, and since they were both male, in Alexei's mind, they must be gay. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Wouldn't you like to be a fly on the wall in his therapy sessions? Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Anyway, let's get to our next guest on the Stuff File program, shall we? Pat Caporelli is the media manager for Fiat Chrysler Automobiles Mopar brand. Recently, she was featured in the publication She Buys Cars, where she talked about everything from her background growing up here in Montreal to the world of women in motorsports. So I thought it would be a good idea to catch up with Pat for a chat. She joins us via Skype from Indianapolis. Hi, Pat.
Hi, how are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for doing this.
You're welcome.
So I was looking at the article, which you posted on your Facebook page, and I got a kick out of reading it. And it talked about one of the things that female drivers are a big part of motorsports. And you have been in the automotive field for a few years now. In the time that you've been there, how have you seen changes as far as women being involved in motorsports?
Well, quite honestly, when I first started in motorsports, women in motorsports, there had been a couple in IndyCar, but it was a rarity. It wasn't something that you saw very often, and just wasn't something that I thought would be. It was kind of like, you remember Manon Raume in hockey? It was a rarity. It was something that kind of happened every once in a while. But suddenly, in the last couple of years, I've been involved with different series and realized that women were a lot more involved in motorsports than I might have thought. And as the years progressed, realized that they're coming much more to the forefront and they're being noticed more, not because they're women in racing, but because they actually have a lot of skills and talent. And it isn't just about sex appeal or that rarity of being a woman in a man's sport. It's become a lot more commonplace. And to be honest, that's been kind of nice.
Well, when you talk about women in motorsports, I'm assuming you're not just talking about drivers, that there are women in other facets of the sport as well.
Absolutely. I mean, in terms of, so I went from being a reporter, a female reporter, going into the locker room into PR and not really realizing that there were as many women in PR in racing as there were. And in all facets of whether it was racing or now automotive, working for FCA, which is Fiat Chrysler Automobiles, previously known as Chrysler, there are a lot more women in positions that maybe I myself didn't realize, even though I feel like I'm a modern woman in a modern world and I should know that women can be in all these different positions, it was still nice to actually see that.
Now, I've known you for quite a few years, and I know you've always been a fan of sports. And as you mentioned, you did work in sports here in Montreal as a reporter. But now you're honing in, and for the last few years, you've honed in on motor sports and working in PR, as you said, for Fiat Chrysler. Is motorsports something that's always been near and dear to your heart, or is it something that's developed over the years because you ended up working in motorsports?
A little bit of both. It was a way that my dad and I bonded. It was hockey and motorsports. And he and I used to watch races and F1 on TV all the way up until Gilles Villeneuve was killed. After that, my dad kind of steered away from racing, and I'm guessing my interest kind of waned after that because we just weren't watching races as much. I don't think it was conscious. And then many years later, F1 returned to Montreal, went to some of those races, always enjoyed that part of it. When I worked at CFCF, Ron Roush was a big auto racing fan, used to talk to him about racing quite a bit, and he put me on the motorsports beat. I started covering the Players Racing team at the time in the late 90s, had quite a ladder series with Alex Tagliani and Patrick Carpentier and Paul Tracy, Andrew Bourdin, Lee Bentham, some young drivers. There was a lot of emphasis on motorsports, and I got to be involved at it at that level and as a reporter and covering that a little bit. And I really enjoyed that. And Greg Moore, of course, was the driver in 1999 that passed during a race. And that was a turning point for me because the way that Ron Roush had handled that situation, we never ran the accident. We never ran that on air. And that was noticed by players and important because it was kind of an unwritten rule that if you don't know the outcome of an accident, you don't play it until you know the outcome. And if it's a fatality, you don't run it. That used to be the rule. And that was something that Ron Roush stuck to. And I learned from that. And that was part of what continued the dialogue with players. And I ended up working for players somewhat because of the way that we handled that.
And we should mention for the listeners outside of Montreal that CFCF is a local CTV affiliate here in Montreal, and Ron Roush used to be the sports director at the time. Now, when you were doing this, when you first started, did you find any difficulties or problems working in that field as a reporter? Because it's you know, a guy's form, and here's this young lady coming in. Were they open at the beginning, or did you have some difficulties at that time?
In racing, definitely not. The complete opposite. I think I had more trouble in baseball, hockey, and football than I ever had in racing. In racing, it just seemed to be equal turf. Maybe not for drivers at first. I think that took a couple more years. But I can say in all honesty that I never felt that I was treated any different because I was a girl working in racing. That wasn't every day. There were some days that I wasn't so sure about that. When I first came to Mopar, I started working in the NHRA drag racing. Drag racing is much more of an old. There's quite the boys' club there, but to be honest, there have been more women racing in drag racing and been successful in drag racing than I even realized. In drag racing itself, there are, at the professional level, women have had more than 100 wins at the professional level. That's more than any other motorsports series, whether it's NASCAR, IndyCar, F1, you name it. NHRA has, I'm blanking on exactly how many women, but more than 100 races and at least 5 to 10 women combined for those 100 races.
Wow. Now, through the years, like you said, you've transitioned from working as a reporter into PR for a major automobile company. But along the way, you had a chance to do a lot of interesting things. And the article that I mentioned earlier, She Buys Cars, which is where you were featured, and people can find it on our Facebook page, by the way, for thestufffile.com. You have had some interesting things you've done, including standing in for Danica Patrick. How did that come to be?
So Danica Patrick went through Atlantics up until the IndyCar series, which is the professional level. Atlantics is kind of the triple A, if you will, of IndyCar racing, open wheel racing. So when she was in IndyCar racing, her PR person, Brent Maurer, and I were very good friends. And occasionally, as PR people, we organize photo shoots and interviews and such. And sometimes our drivers aren't necessarily available. And in some cases, when he had a photo shoot at the track with the car for a magazine or a newspaper, and Danica wasn't available, he would call on me to put on her suit, put on her helmet, and get in the car. And part of the reason is she's a very small person, and there's not too many guys that could get into her fire suit, into her helmet, and fit into the suit. So every once in a while, he would call on me to get into the suit. And I had long hair, so you could kind of pull it out of the helmet, and that way they would for sure knew that there was a girl in the suit. But she's so tiny that there was a couple of times that it was a little tough for me to get into her fire suit or her seat as well. But well, yes, I was a body double, basically, for her.
We'll keep that our little secret, just you and I and about 80,000 listeners. So the article, by the way, thank you very much for the shout-out for the Stuff File program in the article. That's very nice of you to do that.
It's the truth. I spend so much time driving or on the road that I have become addicted to podcasts. And I have always enjoyed yours, of course. Okay. All the way dating back to, well, of course, before pre-podcast days at CJAD.
Right here in Montreal, absolutely. Now, you get to travel a lot. How much time would you say you're away from home?
Oh, I would say at least 32 weeks a year.
Wow. Wow, that's a lot of time.
Between NHRA races and auto shows, Mopar keeps me pretty busy.
Glad to hear it. Glad to hear it. Now, there are more women in the sport, as we've mentioned. Are you finding that there is a large contingent of women who are also fans of the race?
To be honest, I'm actually pleasantly surprised. I think that those numbers are going up. Even NASCAR, and as I would say, even football, NFL acknowledges that the growing market is among female fans. I would say that's definitely the case on the racing side. I'll tell you that this is actually the very first year in my whole career that I'm actually working with a female driver. This is my first year working with Eric Enders, who is now a Mopar driver, and it's taken this long to work with a female driver, but I'm really enjoying it. It's not much different. But there is an understanding and there's an interesting dynamic, and it's still tough to go out there and get stories for your driver. Just because she's a woman doesn't make it easier, doesn't make it harder, but it makes it easier that she's already a two-time world champion, I can tell you that.
So let's put the name out there again. You're working with Erica Enders?
I'm working with Erica Enders. Actually, she and her sister, Courtney, were featured, were actually the topic of a movie by Disney called The Right Track in 2003.
Excellent. Well, Pat, congratulations on all the work you've been doing. You've done so well over the last few years, and well deserved. And thanks for being a guest on the Stuff File program, and thanks for listening to the show.
You're welcome. I enjoy spending my time with you, even if you're just talking to me.
Pat Caporelli, media manager for Fiat Chrysler Automobiles Mopar brand and a regular Stuff File listener. For more info on some of what we were talking about, you can visit her corporate website by going to thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0341, and you'll find the link. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. If you're one of the millions of people who didn't win a share of the huge Powerball jackpot in January, there's at least one good thing about that. You didn't get sued by a notorious prison inmate who claims he deserves the prize. Lottery winners often become targets for all kinds of people wanting money. But after the Robinson family of Tennessee won a third of the $1.6 billion Powerball jackpot, they were sued by a former prisoner who has also filed more than 2,000 other lawsuits, most of them frivolous. Over the years, the prisoner, who would probably love to have his name mentioned here, has also sued the President of the United States, an NFL coach, a NASCAR driver, and Britney Spears. Let's be fair. Despite the fact that many of this man's lawsuits are handwritten and barely legible, they have to be taken seriously. It's a shame, but it's the reality of a court system where the verdicts themselves often resemble lottery jackpots. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
From the land that brought you maple syrup, poutine, ice hockey, and Pamela Anderson, this is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And where does the time go on this program? We really churn through this show. I do still have an idiot of the day coming your way in just a matter of moments, but we don't have time for any more Stuff File news. We're going to get to our next guest almost immediately, just after I remind you, of course, that this program is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Boy, time flies on this program, doesn't it? Anyway, zombie artist Rob Sechetto is back on the program. As the saying goes, and as I just said, time flies. It's been 10 years that Rob has been doing zombie portraits, and to celebrate that milestone, he's created the Zombie Pinup Diva Deck Playing Cards. Rob joins us once again on the line from Sudbury, Ontario. Hi, Rob.
Hi, how you doing?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program, and congratulations on 10 years of drawing zombies.
10 years. Where did the time go?
Exactly. So what is this deal now that, by the way, your lovely bride sent me a notice in Facebook. I guess she's doing all your PR for you these days?
Yes, she is.
Yeah. So she sent me a message in Facebook telling me that you're doing this, and I thought, well, let's have Rob back on the program. So tell us about what you're doing. Tell us about the Zombie Pinup Diva Deck.
Well, I've done a few actual card decks for bicycle playing cards in the past, most notably the Everyday Zombie deck, and then the a Bigfoot deck. So the Everyday Zombie deck was a full deck of cards. All, like, every card had a different zombie drawing on it. I did the slip case. I did the card back, and then for the Bigfoot deck, I did all the face cards, the slip case, and the card back as well. And then I kind of thought, man, you know, the zombie pinup divas that I post on Zombie Daily often are the sort of biggest sort of fan favorites on Zombie Daily. And I thought, what a great showcase for them than having them in this, you know, this zombie playing card deck, because every card will have a new, like a different zombie pinup drawing on it.
So who gets to be the zombies on the cards?
Well, actually, I'm using a lot of art that I've, like, all of the really best images from the Zombie Daily posts that I've done in the past. Plus, one of the most amazing perks or rewards in this deck, in this campaign from Kickstarter, is that girls can actually choose to become a pinup, zombie pinup in the deck.
So how do they go about doing that?
They just go to Kickstarter, the Kickstarter website, and in the search bar they just put in zombie pinups or pinups, and I think my campaign comes up like right first, I believe. Basically all they have to do is choose the option. The options are all the rewards and all the options are on the right-hand side of the page. You just have to scroll down and pick whichever one you would like, and that's as simple as that.
Now, this is not the first Kickstarter program you've done. We spoke to you back in October when you were getting ready to launch your coloring book. How did that turn out?
That turned out fantastically, I have to say. And again, I couldn't do it without the support of the people. It was one of those things where I looked at, you know, what was being sort of produced as coloring books, and I thought, you know, for adults, and I was like, wow, you know, there's some pretty good stuff out there, but I wanted to really come out with something unique, and I basically went to the people and asked, you know, what they would like to see as an adult coloring book. And, you know, people are like, well, you know, zombies and monsters and, you know, like all these sort of sci-fi fantasy, you know, sort of subjects and everything. And I did it, and it was funded fully. It was actually surpassed. It surpassed the goal, which was amazing. So I just ended up printing more. And yeah, that just went swimmingly.
Now, have you decided or thought about taking that one step further? I have an idea for you, for instance. It's something that goes back to a bygone era that no one does anymore. But then again, coloring books were the same thing, too. You didn't hear about adult coloring books, and suddenly they're all the rage. How about a giant paint-by-numbers?
I would love to do that. Like, that's actually a great idea. And, you know, that might be the next thing, because the coloring book went so well, and it was so well received by everyone. That could definitely be a thing. I think there's a bit more to it in the way that I don't know. I think that they supply, like, you have to supply your own paint and stuff, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know how it works logistically, but I would definitely love to do that, because the coloring book type theme is almost exactly like that.
Yeah. And the thing that, the only reason I thought of this is because the coloring book is usually contained in an, I'm assuming the coloring book is 8x10, is it, or is it larger?
Actually, mine is larger than most. It's 9x11, so okay. It's much bigger than a lot of the ones that you see out there in the market.
Because I was thinking, after you've done coloring, or in this case, painting by numbers, you might want to frame it and put it up somewhere. That's why.
Well, that's what I did with the coloring book. I had the pages perforated, and I think, after the fact, I realized that some coloring books are like that too, but I had the pages perforated in the printing process, so you could actually take out what you've colored and frame it.
Excellent. Okay, so getting back to the zombie pinup Diva deck playing cards, they're the standard size issue of playing cards, I'm assuming?
Yes, they are. Yeah.
Okay. And you started, as we've mentioned, this Kickstarter campaign, but when all is said and done, for those who might not want to be in the zombie cards themselves, they just want to buy the cards, where will they be able to get them?
Right now, in order for the Kickstarter thing to work, in order for the cards to even be printed, I have to reach the goal. If I don't reach the goal, none of it happens. All the people that have taken perks or taken out rewards and or have literally purchased the deck in the Kickstarter, none of that can be fulfilled. So I have to make that goal. I think I've got 17 days left, like as of today. And if I don't reach the goal, then none of it happens. I'm actually working on the card back right now. I've done tons of new artwork for the deck specifically. And if it doesn't work, if it doesn't get funded, then it's all kaputnik and it's all for naught. So that's why I'm really imploring people to please fund it. It's very affordable. There's so many different tiers of rewards that you can choose. A deck with shipping and everything is $25. So the only place where you can get that right now is on the Kickstarter, and you have to act like immediately to get that. And then there's other, like the other rewards too. If they don't want to be, part of the deck, as you mentioned, there are other perks. You can get original pinup art. You can get sketch art. You can get zombie portraits are part of it too as perks. Uncut card sheets, which are amazing to see, actually. It's like an uncut poster of all the cards. That's part of the reward program too, and it's all super affordable too. And that basically everything is at the Kickstarter campaign, and that's where it's all at right now.
As I mentioned in the introduction, it's been 10 years since you've been doing this. Did you ever envision when you started 10 years ago that you would branch out to these other ventures with zombie drawings that you've done so far?
Never in a million years, to be honest.
Well, what inspires you? Because, I mean, I would assume as each step progressed, certain things were added to your canon of zombie work. So what inspires you?
This might sound, cheesy or corny or whatever, but the people, my fans, actually inspire me. I need very little motivation. I've always been very self-motivated. When people, sort of go, I love your work. I'd love it if you did this or how about, they offer suggestions or whatever to do. And it's like, yeah, I'm doing it. It's done. And, that's what sort of keeps me motivated. Doing the zombie daily, site, the blog, drawing a new zombie, drawing or painting every single day and posting it. That keeps me going. People just ordering zombie portraits and, loving my work and saying, I can't wait until you post this. I can't wait until that keeps me so motivated and continuing to do it despite every odd that's put in front of me. So, I do it for the fans.
Excellent. And people can find out more information by going to your website, which is zombieportraits.com, correct?
Yes, it is.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Rob, for being on the program with us once again, and good luck with the zombie pinup Diva deck playing cards.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Zombie artist Rob Sichetto. You can check out his website at zombieportraits.com. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0341, and you'll find the links to Rob's site. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
Police say a fugitive in Tampa, Florida, who didn't want to be identified by his fingerprints during a traffic stop in Northeast Ohio, chewed off his fingertips. Kirk Kelly has been jailed on felony counts of evidence tampering and obstructing official business and misdemeanor charges of falsification and resisting arrest. Police in Tallmadge, Ohio, said Kelly and several other people were put into a cruiser without handcuffs after their vehicle was stopped last weekend and officers thought they smelled drugs. Police say Kelly gave false names as they tried to identify him. They say they figured out who he is after photos of his tattoos were provided by police in Florida, where he's wanted on firearms and drug charges. And by the way, we're not talking about a simple tattoo here, but full body tattoos on his chest, arms, shoulders, and back. Now, why? Oh, why? When you're a wanted criminal and you're stopped by police, would you try to chew off your fingers to elude identification when you're covered in one-of-a-kind body art? Well, one reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0341. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0341. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You could also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR in Nashville, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded in iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Experienced another edition of the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Now, doesn't that make you feel all warm and fuzzy? Like watching puppies and kittens frolicking in a field of daisies. Like the smells coming from Grandma's kitchen. Like the hallucinogenics you took in the 60s and I'm taking right now. Hello, cartoon birdies. Perhaps I've said too much. Anyway, you know what I mean. Let the glow wash over you and enjoy. Peace out.